Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and bring in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, man? How you doing?
What's going on, fellas? Hanging in there today. It's going to be long week today.
It's going to be a long week today.
Did you say a long week today? Yeah.
That is for sure. Absolutely no question about it. And, Charles, it's already been a long week for Titans fans so far. 5-2 now after losing to the Bengals on Sunday. And, quite frankly, the defense has just been atrocious so far this year. We were debating in the last segment whether or not the Titans at 5-2 are true Super Bowl contenders. If I were to ask you that, are the Titans a true threat for the Super Bowl in the AFC, what would your response be?
You know, I think if you want to tier it out in terms of how the AFC looks, you know, I think they're probably a second tier contender right now. You know, I think anybody who's sort of stacked up the AFC right now, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, you know, and Kansas City are really those three teams that I think have the ability to dominate at least one side of the ball. But here's the thing that fans should be excited about. Like, you know, Pittsburgh looks very complete right now. Let's see if the health holds. I still think the Devin Bush injury is something that over the length of the season, you know, could end up being a little bit more of a weak spot. They're getting good, you know, backup play there right now. But Baltimore, I mean, Lamar Jackson has looked fallible this season. You know, things are not, he's turning the ball over. They're not tearing the cap, you know, the top off of defense, throwing the football the way they were last year. So I think, you know, Baltimore still got some tweaking to do. You know, in Kansas City, they're 7-1, but Kansas City hasn't exactly been, you know, dominant all season long. You know, they've had games where clearly there have been competitive games, a little bit closer for Kansas City, and some they look better now, but I still think there's a lot to be sorted out here. We got a whole other half of the season, and you know, Tennessee obviously making a move there at the deadline before the deadline to start to shore up that secondary helps. I'm curious to see how, you know, Desmond King fits in. I had a chance to talk to somebody with the Chargers, and you know, I sort of said, like, what went wrong here with this guy? And he just told me that they felt like, particularly this season, he wasn't playing hard every single play. They weren't sure he wanted to be there. And apparently, from what I was told, like the opinion on him started to sour last season. There was a play where Hunter Renfrow ran a slant, and King came up and couldn't get his hands on him. Renfrow went the distance, was like 50, 60-yard touchdown. And there were just guys in the organization who are like, you know, look, the long speed's going to be a problem. Like he's got to be perfect in every other area. And this is going to be a guy that at least at that point they thought was going to want a big contract extension. He told me like, hey, there were people who wanted to deal him last year. And so it'll be interesting to see how he fits in. Obviously has versatility in the secondary, has some special teams versatility. So it's a good cheap piece, which frankly is what everybody's looking for at the deadline right now, you know, particularly the buyers that are out there. But I still, you know, I don't want to be a broken record here, but until Tennessee can figure out how to rush the passer consistently and finish, I'm not talking about just pressures, I'm talking about finishing pressures, you're going to have problems and you're going to run into teams in the postseason. I mean, there's no way you can beat Kansas City with the defense functioning like this. I mean, you'll get smoked against Kansas City at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. So 6 hours left. Is there anyone out there, Charles, on the pass rushing front? And we've talked about throwing out. Actually, we talked about Melvin Ingram, another right. Charger yesterday. But yeah, it's slim pickings. I mean, anything sure that comes to mind that actually could be swung by John Robinson here to turn around? Because I agree with you. I mean, if they're not affecting the quarterback and putting the quarterback down at sometimes, I don't care who you have back there.
Yeah, I mean, Engram is a big one. I mean, that's I think that the Chargers right now are in a little bit of a state of flux. I think, you know, Engram is a guy that clearly teams are making a call on. But again, this all comes down to, you know, really what's cheap. And again, I still think the attractive piece out there to be had, you know, is still, you know, Stephon Gilmore. And I, you know, I know that's not a pass rusher, but again, I think there are other ways to affect your pass rush when you can get individual guys who can single up. The problem with Stephon Gilmore is he's not cheap. You know, he's the Patriots want a first round pick for him. I think Gilmore would like to get a contract extension in place. So I think if he were to be dealt, you know, he doesn't want to go in and play out this season and then have one more year left on his deal. I think he would like to get the extension done now. Teams aren't looking to dole out money next year. But yeah, I mean, I think you know, Engram is the guy that you hit on that I think if there's going to be an edge rush availability out there, he's going to be a guy that you could probably get. He's not going to be super cheap. You know, I still think you're talking about a solid middle round pick for him, like at least a third, maybe a third in a player, maybe a third in a conditional. I think the problem is, you know, for the Titans, you have pieces there that you invested in, and you're going to have to figure out how to make those work. And I don't know how you do that at this point. I don't know how you make guys, you know, who have not shown up suddenly click into place the remainder of this season. And again, these are also, we're talking about a couple of guys there, and everybody knows who we're talking about, that have been mercurial when it's come to the stat production in their past stops anyway. You know, they weren't major, you know, big, consistent sack guys anyway, finishers. So it's not a great place, honestly, to be for Tennessee. And I actually think, I don't think there's going to be the flurry of trades toward the deadline that maybe some people think. I had a chance to talk to an AFC team that is big into buying, and the GM just told me, he's like, look, man, I'm calling all over the place. And he's like, I don't know if it's COVID. I don't know if it's, you know, teams trying to figure out like salary roll situations and next year what. He's just like, it's slow. Like, it's slow. People are not banging down your door to sell guys, and they're looking. Like, they are looking to buy pieces for a playoff run, and it's just been a drag for them.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Charles, if you had to identify the best team in the NFC right now, who would you say? All of them, when you talk about the Packers and the Seahawks and the Bucks, the Saints, they've all got some warts. Who would be right. The best team right now in the NFC if you had to nail it down to one?
You know, it's Seattle because there's reinforcements coming. You know, Carlos Dunlap's the guy you just deal with, you deal for. You know, David Snacks Harrison's the guy who's coming into the fold. You haven't had Jamal Adams. He's been banged up. So to me, there's three starting caliber players. I mean, depending, what are you going to get out of Dunlap? Like, let's see. Let's see if Dunlap's, was he not motivated in Cincinnati? Maybe there's no tread there left. You know, they have to really figure that out. I think they're pretty optimistic that he's going to come in and be motivated. Once he gets there, you know, Snacks Harrison, same situation. I mean, you know, what are you really going to get out of him? And you won't know until he's in the building. They feel good about Adams. You know, he's got to be healthy. But interestingly enough, I also think Seattle's a team that quietly, I think, has poked around the cornerback market still, kind of seeing if there's maybe a corner out there they might be able to add. You know, they've got some youth there and clearly some vulnerabilities at the cornerback spot. So that's a team that quietly I think you could add. But I think if you're stacking up the NFC, to me, that's it. And, you know, Tampa Bay obviously is rounding things out. I think the fact that they're starting to show some signs running the football a little more consistently probably helps Tampa Bay. Green Bay, you know, I mean, Green Bay, to me, they need to add a defensive piece, but obviously you hear a lot of talk about them making calls on wide receivers, maybe looking to add a guy on the cheap, whether that's, you know, Golden Tate, whether that's Will Fuller from Houston. But like you said, I mean, there's warts from all the top teams, and I think to me it's just Seattle's got that element to stack some pieces that are already sort of in-house there and that they've already dealt with. And, you know, are also veteran guys. One thing I didn't want to bring up, I forgot. I did forget to bring that up, but I'm in Houston here. Mike Vrabel call Romeo Crennel and say, hey, what can we do for J.J. Watt? You know, like, can we get J.? Here's the problem with J.J. Watt. The Houston Texans aren't going to give him up cheaply. Like if Watt really wanted to go, and he was like, hey, I want to go play for Mike Vrabel in Tennessee. The problem is they have an inexperienced guy in Jack Easterby, who I think, honestly, I don't know that he knows what he's doing when it comes to, you know, dealing guys at the deadline, because Bill O'Brien isn't there. But I'm just telling you, like, if Raves really wants a guy and someone he's familiar with, I don't know that Watt would protest leaving Houston at this point. You know, like, he might be like, all right, you know, give me a shot to go somewhere and produce something, and things haven't gone as well here, and I don't know that I want to start all over with a rebuild, you know, defensively. So maybe that's that one guy where there's some familiarity there, but I don't know why I love playing with Jadeveon Clowney. So, you know, there's a whole other element of that. But if you're really talking about a relationship, making a deal come together, maybe that's the one that you throw out there. I just don't think the Texans are going to be very overpriced with a lot of their players. I think that's part of the problem with Will Fuller. You know, it's another guy that everybody's calling about, but I think the Texans are just asking for too much.
Right. Well, what about Merciless? Is another guy too who maybe?
Yeah,
could...
yeah, yeah. Whitney. Yeah. I mean, I think Whitney's still got, you know, something there. Absolutely. I think he's another guy. I think what the problem with the Texans is, once O'Brien went out the door and Easterby kind of took the controls there, a number of teams hit me up to sort of ask, because they know I live in Houston. They're like, well, what happened there? Why did that happen? And what's going on with this Jack Easterby guy? He's got no background as like a talent evaluator. He's got no background like really dealing with like, you know, trade talks and cap and all this stuff. And now all of a sudden it's like he's the GM. He's a de facto GM. And I'm like shrugging. I'm like, I have no clue what they're doing with this guy. And the problematic part of it was, when this all went down, particularly over the last week, teams are like, I think they want to take a poke at a number of the Texans wide receivers, not just Will Fuller, but there are a couple of different guys that I think teams would like to make a call on. I think the defense, there are a couple of different guys, but literally the first negative thing I heard back in this process was they're overpriced. Like they don't even really know what they want for guys. And it's clear that they want somebody to throw out, you know, hey, here's a first-round pick offer for Watt, or here's a second-round pick offer for Fuller. And teams aren't—they're like, nah, we're not doing that. Like, come on, for a rental, you know, for particularly like in a Fuller case. So that, I think that hurts the Titans a little bit. I think if Bill O'Brien was there right now and they were taking this thing apart, I think that would be a lot easier for that call, maybe a trade to happen.
Oh, I'm sure. Fifth rounder and take Watt and Merciless, guys. That's a good deal for me, right? I'm Bill O'Brien.
Hey, and I don't think, you know, at the end there, I don't think things are great between Bill and JJ. So, you know,
yeah.
I think JJ's feeling better about Houston now that, you know, Romeo's running the team. But, boy, if Bill was still there, man, I mean,
fire sale.
Dealt Hopkins.
That tells you all you need to know.
Yeah.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. Charles, great stuff as always, man. We really appreciate you taking some time to join us today.
Absolutely. Enjoy the day, guys. And as always, be safe. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, brother.
You too, buddy.
You as well. Interesting stuff there from Charles Robinson regarding the NFL trade deadline. We'll react to that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale League Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. Nashville SC takes on FC Dallas tomorrow night at Nissan Stadium at 7:30 p.m. Catch all the action on ESPN 94.9, starting with pregame coverage at 7:15. And speaking of that game tomorrow night against FC Dallas, I got a pair of tickets to give away for that game at Nissan Stadium. If you can hit up our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, and tell us the name of the program that Joe, earlier in the show, compared Tennessee to. The first one to mention that program's name can win a pair of tickets to see Nashville SC take on FC Dallas tomorrow night at Nissan Stadium. So hit up our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, for that.
Program.
Which program?
Their program.
I misspoke. I said program.
As they move,
it's gotten into me.
As they move forward,
what program
will they resemble then?
Did y'all see the video over the weekend of the dude impersonating Nick Saban, handing out like Halloween candy?
No.
It was incredible.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Like the voice, like he looks nothing like Nick Saban, but the voice itself, great match. And he used the word program. So automatically some bonus points in that.
Did he say aight?
Many times. He said aight many times.
You better like that Snickers, aight?
Yes, many times.
And by the way, Nick Saban didn't used to say program when I covered him. So
it just means more than the SEC.
Exactly. He got SEC-ized.
Yes, he did. We had Floyd Reese on earlier in the show, former Titans GM and co-host of Jared and the GM, talking about his vantage point of whether or not the Titans should be done. The NFL trading deadline today at 3 p.m. Central Time. Here's what Floyd had to say about what he would do today if he is John Robinson.
You know, the truth is I think I'd probably be done. You know, there are so many additional issues, and we've got so much, I want to call it dead money, but it's not dead money, but we've got investments in players that we're just not getting anything out of. You know, I don't know how much more of a risk you can run. It's easy now to say, I want to do something. Then all of a sudden, the draft comes around, and, you know, you're drafting three players, and people are saying, wait a minute, I want to draft more guys. Well, really? You know, or it comes time to sign Jonnu Smith and sign Brown and whoever else may be out there, and you're saying, but we don't have any money. You know, we spend it on this and that and something else. So as tantalizing as it is for some to say, yeah, change, go for it, you know, you're going to pay the piper now or you're going to pay him later, but you will pay.
So that was Floyd Reese earlier on the show. Joe, what do you make of Floyd's assertion there that if he's John Robinson, he's probably done at this point, given all the different considerations that go into this defense and some contract situations potentially next year as well?
Well, Floyd's got that level-headed, long view of a GM, and I say, no, spend now, panic, trade everyone, and change it all up. I will ask you this. What will Titans fans, how will they be feeling if we get to three today and this is it?
Probably not very good, but my follow-up question would be, all right, what is a move they can make today that you'd be satisfied with?
Yeah.
Like, what is the move out there for John Robinson right now that you'd be like, yes, I feel great about this defense? I'm not sure that exists.
No. I mean, I think, you know, if you could find something like something relative to Desmond King in the same idea, not a huge price, but at least someone who has demonstrated some ability to, in this case, rush the passer, then I think you'd feel better. Like, okay, there's at least another person. I think you'd feel better right now if Kamale Kray were still on the roster. Yep. Or if DeAndre Walker were still on the roster. Like, someone else who could maybe give you something. So, yeah, you're right. There's no clear answer. And the way Charles Robinson described it last segment, sounds like it's tough right now for buyers. Sellers have huge prices, and that's an interesting thing in Houston with a not really a GM kind of doing things, you know? It's like, how about he's like overcompensating for the way Bill O'Brien was.
Do you think we glossed over Kamale Kray maybe a little bit too much a few weeks ago when the Titans did trade him, and it was like, oh, well, this guy doesn't want to be a part of this team. Let's just trade him. But I think this defense would like to have Kamale, whatever, on this defense.
You don't need to
right
pronounce
now.
It right now anyway, right. Anymore.
They would like to have Correa on this defense. I mean, he's at least serviceable.
Well, just think about where they were during that. Was that before the Texans game or the Steelers game? I mean, either way, they were undefeated at the time. So you're feeling pretty good about yourself at that point, even with defense and the struggles of pass rush the way it was. Taylor Lewan was still healthy. Your offense was still clicking at, I think, probably, if not the highest level, close to the highest level in the NFL. So I think that masked a lot of problems with this team. Maybe you just didn't care as much about the defense because you were winning anyway. Now that you've started to lose, yeah. I mean, I think they'd love to have Kamale Kray right about now, at least to try something else that's different.
Yeah, and I just don't understand totally, and there has to be more to the story with him early in the year. When you talk about, because Correa to me is absolutely the every down guy. You know, he's going to set the edge, and he's going to be solid on first and second down. He's not a great pass rusher, but he was a guy to me that was going to take – now that you brought in Clowney, now Correa can come in and give Landry a little bit of relief on his snaps, but it wasn't happening. He wasn't playing at all. So whatever that is, you know, he was performing poorly in practice, or, you know, obviously the Clowney thing is going to change how you look at Correa. But, yeah, right now it'd be nice to have him on the roster. And at that time, even just a few weeks ago, it's like, okay, well, got to give Beasley a little bit of time here. You can't expect to snap the fingers. And it's just that now, as each week goes and we see out there what little impact he's making, it becomes less and less realistic that it's ever going to change. But I think today they're not going to have some – they're not going to get J.J. Watt. They're not going to get some star to rush the passer. I still think it's absolutely worth exploring – not only a trade for a mid-level, you know, low pick, mid-level pick guy, but also practice rosters. But this season is going to hinge on individuals playing way better than they are right now. It really is.
Yeah. And you brought up an interesting name with Charles Robinson, Melvin Ingram of the Chargers, who historically has been a really good player in this league. Now, he's played in four games this year. He does not have a sack yet on the season. It has not had the type of season that we've grown accustomed to him seeing. Injuries, I think, have been a part of that as well. But if you're the Titans, do you maybe make a call on Melvin Ingram and see if there's a chance you go back to the well you went to yesterday and they're willing to deal another player to you?
I mean, you've already been talking to him, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sure that was discussed already. I guess the fact that they made a deal with that franchise and he wasn't one of them, does that mean that's already been talked about?
Could
and
be.
You move on from it. But yeah, he's a pretty intriguing player, a guy who I think still has some juice left. But yeah, I think it'd be good for them to do something. And even if they do, you know, we're going to be talking about guys needing to improve until they either do or they don't, and this defense continues to flounder and this team's record probably starts going the wrong direction.
Are you surprised by what you heard from Charles in the last segment about maybe the NFL trading deadline this year not being as busy as we had anticipated? He said, you know, he's talked to some general managers. It's a little slow out there right now. Are you surprised by that at all?
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess. You know, again, the trading deadline, I used to not know when it was in this league.
So it's so
still
uneventful.
It still seems not slow to me. You know that there's been a few deals, but I guess is this cap related? Is this people like, look, we're not going to be doing these big moves unless we get major stuff back. I guess I get why in a year like this maybe that would make sense.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says, Melvin Ingram having zero sacks makes him a perfect fit for the Titans front seven.
There you go. He fits in perfectly. How much has he played this year?
Four games.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's enough to have a sack. Come on in, Melvin.
How many games in your mind is enough to have a sack? And has Vic Beasley or Jadeveon Clowney, have they reached that mark yet? Is seven enough for a guy like Jadeveon Clowney?
Listen, with Clowney, I said, like, if he gets five sacks this year, he could have a great year. But he's not. So, like, the sack number doesn't all of a sudden become the most important thing with Clowney.
No.
It never was. Beasley, that's the only reason he's here. He's only here for sacks. He's had a huge number. Unlike Clowney, he has a history of having a huge number of sacks. It's a long time ago. But, he, you know, even last year, what do you have, eight?
Yeah, at eight last year.
End up with eight, you know, and I know and a lot of people were like, yeah, some garbage time late season sacks, but okay, well.
You take a garbage time sack right now to at least make you feel better about something.
Right. But that's his. So, like, of course it's fair to say 20-some million and zero sacks. It is. But, again, one guy is really judged on that stat only. And he is the guy who is not showing that he could even get close to a sack. The other guy is judged on being good against the run, being disruptive, you know, putting pressure. He's not like, tackled for loss and all that stuff.
He hasn't done any of those things.
He hasn't done much. You know, he hasn't done much. I mean, he has not earned the money. But the sack number is not – like, he could be good and start to earn the money without getting the sack number. Beasley, either get sacks or there's no reason for him to be on the field. He's not a first or second down player at all. Clowney is. You have to judge him differently. Right now, they're both not doing well.
Let's go back to the poll question at 1025 The Game on Twitter. On this election day, who would you rather vote off the Titans defense, Vic Beasley or Jonathan Joseph? We're at 292 votes right now. Jonathan Joseph, 55% of the vote. Vic Beasley at 45%. So this gap has actually widened a little bit with Jonathan Joseph. At one point, it was 51-49 in favor of Joseph. Now 55-45 in favor of Jonathan Joseph. Are you surprised by that?
So can we call the race then? Is this, pretty close to being able to call this probably.
There's still enough time for Vic Beasley to drive from Atlanta, get an Uber.
Yeah, get the Uber from the McDonald's in Atlanta on his way back here.
With his Egg McMuffin.
Yeah.
Get back here and still convince the people of Nashville.
Yeah. Well, I think the voters who went with Joseph are thinking of it correctly, that there's actually alternatives. For Vic, right now, there isn't much of one. So I'd hold on to him. Like if I honestly had, like if I was John Robinson and you can cut one player right now, I mean, it's got to be Joseph. Because you can't cut a guy who has to play 40 snaps for you on a terrible day because you have no one else who could play those snaps.
Yeah, I mean, it's a problem. Let's go back quickly to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Josh texts in, it may have nothing to do with the trade deadline, but is there any recently retired players or free agent players that can rush the passer that we could sign? We've heard people bring up Clay Matthews. We've heard people bring up Cam Wake. Should the Titans kick the tires on either one of those two guys? At this point, I'm of the opinion of if you can get them in here for relatively cheap, what difference does it make? Sure, go ahead.
I mean,
it's worth a shot.
Look, Cam Wake, I thought was doing some stuff. Obviously, he was great in the opener at Cleveland last year, but he was okay. I mean, he was making, what, $7 million? I think they signed him to 3-year, $21 million, something like that, you know? So what would he – if he were totally healthy now, what would he take to play for part of a season? I mean, I don't think it's crazy. And Clay Matthews. I was shocked earlier. We were talking about Clay Matthews. He's 34 years old.
Yeah.
Now,
he's had a lot of tread there.
Yeah. So what are his main injuries? I don't remember. He's been banged up a lot.
He's got some hip problems. There's a lot of things that he's gone through.
If either of those guys are hoping to play and have been staying in shape, sure. Yeah. I mean, look, it's gotten that desperate. I mean, let's not pretend it hasn't gotten that desperate. You know? And the idea of trotting out Vic Beasley right now,
it's just a waste of time. Like, you're not accomplishing anything at that point anymore. He's not going to do anything. I think it's pretty clear at this point.
To say he will, right? Yeah. I mean, I understand the investment, and you can't say investment doesn't influence kind of how, you know, if a guy's going to get a little bit longer time to show it if you paid $9.5 million for him. Are we at the point where, like, there's no point in even checking it out anymore? I think we're close.
Absolutely close. When we come back, there's an interesting comparison that Joe has tossed out there between Tennessee and another prominent football program around the country. We'll discuss that comparison on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Titans fans, Corner Pub is the place to check out The Game with locations in Bellevue, Brentwood, or downtown, and great beer specials including $1 off of Yazoo and Happ and Harry's draft beers, plus Happ and Harry's bucket specials. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show live from the Corner Pub downtown this Sunday. Join ESPN 102.5 The Game from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. prior to the Titans taking on the Chicago Bears at Nissan Stadium. The NFL pregame show features Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, and is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by Rumble On, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, you had an interesting comparison earlier in the show comparing the Tennessee Volunteers football program to another prominent program around college football. And we threw that out as a question to give away our tickets to the Nashville SC game tomorrow against FC Dallas. Trevor, with the correct answer, guessing that Michigan was the program you have compared Tennessee to. Joe, as you look at those two programs between Tennessee and Michigan, what stands out to you about that comparison?
Yeah, it's just the entitlement, the drought, the entitlement, the one big obstacle in the way, although there's more than one. But the big obstacle, Alabama every year for Tennessee, Ohio State every year for Michigan, can't come close to getting past either of them. But just I think the drought, the massive fan base, all the resources, all the reasons that they should be winning, I think it has made it so that when there's a glimmer of hope, there's a lot of overreaction and this could be it. And then I also think that the losses are harder. You know, I actually thought that maybe like some Michigan fans would be upset about this comparison. I've been accused of being a homer by many a Michigan fan.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah, if you cover a college beat, the rival fans, the fans of the rival of that beat, always think the beat writers who cover the other team are homers. It's kind of like fans always think announcers are against them. It's so infuriating. It's infuriating.
Yeah.
It's one of my biggest pet peeves in life is the announcers hate us. Gary Danielson hates Tennessee. Now, I heard my family. The announcers are for Michigan, not against Michigan State. Really? Are they? But I think it gets even more. I mean, seriously, Tennessee fans think Gary Danielson's like the Georgia Alabama fan. Shut up. He's not cheer. If your team stinks and he says it.
Then he does love him some Nick Saban. I'll give him that.
Well, fine.
But who doesn't?
Fine. But I mean, like this whole thing of like the announcers are against you. You know, I think it, like Michigan, Tennessee fans, with all the other things that happen, I think it gets even more, probably just because it's bigger fan bases too. There's just more people that are going to freak out about stuff like that. The fan bases are similar to me and just what they've gone through. You're talking about 04 for Michigan's last Big Ten championship. You're talking 07 for last division title.
Yeah,
for
last
Tennessee.
Time they got to Atlanta was 07.
Last time they got to Atlanta. Michigan has had more success. I guess, honestly, you probably feel better if you're Tennessee in that you haven't landed your dream coach who everyone agreed was going to bring you multiple national titles, and then you've fallen short of that. At least with Tennessee, it's like you've had to settle for like your fourth choice. I don't know if that's
like what would
or
it
worse.
Be right now for Tennessee if like they landed Gruden back in the day when everybody was clamoring for John Gruden.
That would be the one, because you mentioned Peyton Manning earlier, and obviously he's one of the most beloved balls ever. But you know, Harbaugh was on a coaching track. Harbaugh got a team to the Super Bowl, so Harbaugh was a proven coach and your former quarterback, not the quarterback Manning was. Manning was a great player, but you're right. Gruden is the guy. Had they gotten Gruden, and then it's like, and he brings in this staff, and then you keep losing to Alabama every year. You get pounded by – you can't beat your other rival. You know, you lose – I mean, 9 out of 13 Michigan's lost to Michigan State. I don't know what the comparison is in the SEC to Michigan State for Tennessee.
But I don't know, because it's different with Florida too. Like Florida's won like 14 of the last 15, so it's not really that either.
Yeah.
Like it's just total dominance.
That's total domination, right. That's 14 out of 15 is not 9 of 13, but – but regardless, like, yeah, if Tennessee had gotten Gruden and then still struggling, then it's like, well, then what turns it around? And I still think both programs should be able to, with all the things they have, the fan base, the resources, the history, the facilities, the access to talent, I think they both can get there. What does there mean? Can they both get to being – like, can Michigan replace Ohio State and all of a sudden start being like a natty team every year? Can Tennessee replace Alabama? That doesn't seem realistic. But they can get to the point of getting their conference title games.
Yeah.
Right? That'd be a start. Michigan's never played in the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah.
They've never played in it.
It's just pretty unbelievable when you think about it.
Yeah. You know? I think they can both get to that. And that, for both fan bases, I mean, that would be a big, big deal.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think if you're a Tennessee fan, you'd take that in a heartbeat. Let's go back to the text line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. CD text in. I love the Vols, but I can't see them becoming a consistent top 10 or 15 team anytime soon. High school recruits have no memory of the Vols ever being consistently a top team. Peyton Manning and the national title team after him were over 20 years ago. I've long lost any optimism I have for this team. Help me.
I'm sorry. That's both a realistic and a sad. I think that's a little pessimistic, though.
But the point he brings up, like how many high school kids right now
that's a good point.
Have any idea what Tennessee football was like back in its glory days? None.
You're absolutely right. And that helps you a lot if you just have in your mind this is a championship program. But Tennessee has recruited well, right? I mean, Tennessee is not recruiting at the level of Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, but they've recruited well. Michigan has recruited well. Again, not quite at that level, But both of them have brought in like a lot of guys who I think are going to play in the NFL in recent years have played in the NFL. So they've overcome that. But, yeah, when you compare yourself to an Alabama, compare yourself even to now like an LSU, now you know they just won it. I agree. Like you need to have that season where people watch. I mean, Tennessee could have just gone to the Sugar Bowl, and that's not the same thing. But even to be in the Sugar Bowl, I think, gives you a platform, right? Four years ago, that it helps. It's got to help a little bit on that.
And they totally screwed it up.
And they bombed out.
And now you look ahead to this week for Tennessee against Arkansas. I've called it the most important game of Jeremy Pruitt's tenure so far for the Vols. What is it going to be like around this program if they lose this game to Arkansas on Saturday?
Well, this is where Tennessee fans will distinguish themselves from Michigan fans. The Michigan fans are screaming at each other, and some want Harbaugh fired, but most are just like, well, he's not going to be fired, but he's never going to get it done and all this stuff. And there's a lot of anger and all that, but Tennessee fans will blow them off. I mean, they'll blow them off Twitter, because Vol Twitter, that's one area. They're not the same. Vol Twitter dominates Wolverine Twitter, whatever you want to
go
talk
blue
about.
Yeah.
It will be bad. It'll be really bad for Pruitt, and I think Pruitt is way better at than his predecessor at pushing that stuff aside. I don't think it's going to affect him doing his job, but it can't help but make your job tougher, because a lot of your job is still perception, and it's what the public thinks, and it's recruiting, and they'll be looking at, like you said earlier, like a 3-7 season if they lose this game. You can't do it.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mark from Clarksville text in, if Tennessee finishes 4-6, is Jeremy Pruitt gone?
No.
Do you envision any scenario this year where he's gone, even 3-7?
No, I don't think so at all. I think it would. The only way that would happen would be if it was accompanied by some scandal we don't know about or something like that. Now, will fans be screaming for him to be gone? Yes. But if I'm Philip Fulmer, one, he's my guy. I hired him. I'm not giving up on my guy after 3 years. And we can come around to, even though all the criticisms are fair about no quarterback being available to replace Garantano, that's a totally fair criticism on this coaching staff, you can still say, hey, he gets his quarterback now next year. Let's see that. Let's see Harrison Bailey, second year in the program, and what will that look like if he figures it out and Jim Chaney gets the most out of all that stuff. Jim Chaney is a guy, though, I will say this. I mean, we've seen Jeremy Pruitt change a lot of things already. I think if the offense doesn't start playing like an SEC offense and using its strengths and being creative and not being stupid, then I think Jim Chaney could be in trouble for as much money as he makes. And that may be rash, but Jeremy Pruitt's been rash.
Yeah, but I think that absolutely could take place. So going to be interesting to see how they come out and play in this game against Arkansas. I think a huge game for Tennessee coming up on Saturday. When we come back, what did we make of the debacle from Vanderbilt over the weekend on Saturday, and where is this Vanderbilt football program at right now? We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Man, what is it? A disaster for Vanderbilt over the weekend. A 54-21 loss to Ole Miss. And I'll be honest with you, Joe, I watched a lot of that game. At one point it was 54-14, and I just kept watching because of how bad it was getting. Ole Miss did whatever they wanted to do offensively. Vanderbilt had no answer for it whatsoever. I think the only time Ole Miss got stopped in the game where they had their starters out there was halftime. I think the clock stopped them one time, and that was literally it. They scored on every other drive with their starting offense on the field. It was pretty incredible to watch what took place on Saturday with Vanderbilt.
Yes. Now, am I going to be an excuse maker now?
I don't know. Are you?
Well, no. But I will say this. I saw Ole Miss do the same thing to Alabama, right? I mean, they absolutely did. They went up and down the field whenever they wanted all night long against Alabama. So
they did.
We were all right in picking Ole Miss. I thought Vanderbilt's offense would have a better day.
If Ole Miss wanted to in that game, they could have put up 75 points.
Yes, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, it's a now is that the worst offensive mismatch or matchup for Vanderbilt this year? I don't know. I mean, that quarterback and that receiver are elite. But, you know, they had no pressure, couldn't stop the run, couldn't stop the pass, were completely overmatched, and it was a good day for them not to have fans in the stadium. But, again, like, that is an elite offense.
I mean, it is. Matt Corral finished 31 of 34, 412 yards passing, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. Elijah Moore, 14 catches, 238 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah. I thought Elijah Moore, I mean, there's an example of, well, both of them actually because they took him out, but Elijah Moore could have easily had a 300-yard receiving game.
Oh, yeah.
Here. Yeah, so.
Broke A.J. Brown's single-game yardage record for Ole Miss.
That's pretty good. Yeah, it's, I mean, it, this is, we set 0-10 going into the year, and the funny thing is I think they go from the probably the worst. I mean, who else could possibly do that to them on their schedule? I mean, I shouldn't say that. I mean, Tennessee could run again for 400 yards. That's probably the worst matchup. They may be going now to the best, the way Mississippi State is playing. So this is one of those things where it's like, okay, these guys can't do anything. As crazy as that is, they can't. So can you stop this at all?
Yeah, and to your point offensively, like Vanderbilt, Kent Seals finishes 31 of 40, 319 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception. Those stats look pretty good. And look, a lot of the throws Kent Seals made, I really like. I think he's going to be a really good player in this league. But Vanderbilt just did not move the ball very consistently. Didn't run the ball well against Ole Miss in that game.
Yeah, not well enough. And I think Keon Henry Brooks is still, though, a really good player. I think those are the two guys you look at on that team and say, man, you know, freshman, sophomore, like you really like what they give you. They've got okay receivers. But, yeah, you wanted that offense. That was the only chance you had was to have drives and have balance and take clock off and finish and score. They didn't do enough. I do like Ken Seals a lot though, but they're just overmatched, and it's Vanderbilt needs 4 games against group of 5 teams every year, or else it's not pretty. And then the question is, what does this say about the direction of the program?
Yeah, and to that point, let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben text in, how come people keep rooting for a team when they'll never make changes that are necessary to compete? Already at a disadvantage due to academics, but they won't spend to help themselves. The fans need to abandon, and maybe they'll get their attention doing that. Well, the problem is,
have they not already?
Yeah, I mean, they kind of have, and I don't think there's much attention that's being grabbed over there right now.
Yeah.
I mean, this program, it's in a rough spot, and you mentioned kind of the earlier that we've talked about, you know, the lack of funding and buying into athletics over there and how that's catching up with them right now. It looks like the gap is growing between Vanderbilt and the rest of the SEC right now.
Yeah, it is. And this is not to say, well, just disregard like what Derek Mason's doing or whatever, but I think honestly the only way it goes in the other direction is from above. I mean, I think that's the only way Vanderbilt fans are going to feel better about anything. Like if Vanderbilt comes out and let's say they get a few turnovers and they play good defense and Ken Seals has a big game and they beat Mississippi State, is everybody going to be like, okay, well, maybe there's a little glimmer of hope then for football? No, they're going to
probably not.
They're probably going to go 1-9 then, and it's going to be the same issue. I mean, this has to be fixed by Mason's bosses and then evaluate him and, you know,
it's
fair to evaluate him.
There are mistakes he's making right now that are not good. I mean, you had a penalty on Saturday where two guys wearing the same number on the field. Like, that can't happen. You've got to be better than that as a coaching staff. What is he, in year 7 right now? Like, that can't happen anymore. So I don't want to sit here and make excuses for Derek Mason because I think a lot of what's happened with this program right now is on him. But certainly to your point, it's a very difficult environment to win in when all of these external factors that we've talked about continue to creep in and affect what you have on the football field.
Right. The change has to be because Vanderbilt says, and you know, new chancellor, new AD, and Vanderbilt says, look, and we got some of this. Candace Lee talked about a little bit of specifics, but still, to beyond that, you know, here's this much has been raised. This is happening. They did put a timetable on the lockers, and that's a good start. So much more has to be done. But like a big project, like we are going to change this stuff around. That is going to happen way before anything on the field happens. And listen, you can fire Derek Mason, and that's fine. And I know some Vanderbilt – I think probably a lot of Vanderbilt fans at this point would be happy about that and say, okay, finally got Derek Mason out of there, so let's move forward. I want to know who's attracted to this job right now as it stands, as it is, with all these things that over time have eroded. And I want to know what whoever you can hire is going to come in and do. I mean, you can throw James Franklin out there, but again, James Franklin at that time period was also different than this time period. Not to mention, we've talked about the whole the sort of perfect storm with the SEC that was going on in there. Hey, can't take away, he did a good job, and he got a facility built. So there's one thing that he got done that Derek Mason has not gotten done. James Franklin was so aggressive, he got a practice facility built, not just for football, but still, it's for football. It's a good facility.
Yeah.
You know, Derek Mason hasn't been able to, you know, to get something like that through. But that's why like this job's so unattractive right now. That's the case to keep going until you can make it more attractive. I could make the case for Derek Mason to opt out and say, I'm going to go be a DC somewhere after, you know, make a lot of money still and have success and win and have facilities. Just not my own.
Yeah.
You know,
somewhere else. It's going to be interesting to see how that team goes the rest of the season. Look, a big chance on Saturday, probably I think the best chance they've got left to win a game is Saturday against Mississippi State, that dreadful offense right now. So we'll see how it goes on that front. NFL trading deadline today at 3 p.m. Central Time. Everybody stay safe today. We'll be back tomorrow, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Robbie and Rex Road. Darren Donica Chased coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.